As I was saying before I was so rudely interrupted, good evening, dear listener. James again. I'm in the quiet comfort of the studio now. The children have gone to bed. Beth's reclining on the sofa and I'm hiding downstairs in front of my piano, which I've tuned two notes of so far. I wonder how they sound. I'll try that in a minute. Anyway, I was talking about the amazing astronomical tricks they can do now to detect planets, I think, you know, hundreds of light years away. So when they see the light from these planets, it is 129 or 150 years after it originated from the planet. And that just does my head in. Especially since, actually, they can see some things due to the redshifting of the galaxy. Because the universe is expanding, the stars are moving outwards, and therefore, just like the Doppler effect, the light changes frequency and it goes towards red. And these things... these things are stars which are hundreds of millions of light years away, which means that the light we're seeing now is really, you know, predates the evolution of man, definitely, and even the creation of this planet. But the crazy thing is, I can kind of understand how you can, when you've got a gravitational force spinning around the sun is going to move slightly, and you can detect that over the matter of nights. Great, that's fine. Yes, I can understand that. That's really clever. And all you need to do is make sure it's all you have to do. Because the Earth is spinning, you've got to make sure the telescope is pointed exactly the same part of the sky throughout the whole night. So it's not trivial at all. And then they say, this is the bit I was coming to, they can detect what kind of atmosphere that planet, which is 100-something light years away, which is billions of miles away, has got. Wow. The fact that they can, you know, you're never going to be able to get there, because it's going to take you 129 years even if you travel at the speed of light. But you can find out what the atmosphere is like. And of course they're talking about the Goldilocks zone, where the planet is far enough from the sun to be potentially habitable. But they don't know what the atmosphere is like. And I'm thinking, that's just extraordinary. And that's one out of billions of planets around trillions, I guess, of suns. And that kind of scares me off astronomy in a way, because, yes, the opportunities for discovering something unique are greater simply because of the chances, you know, the chances of it happening statistically being greater. But my goodness, if it's not like looking like for a needle in a haystack, I don't know what is. Remarkable. And this is dealing with things that have taken years to get here. It was funny when I was reading something about the Mars rover. The instructions they were sending, the telemetry, was taking so long to get there that when the robot had actually done the thing, it took, basically, they'd send a signal and 35 minutes later, they get the result that it had finished. Which is just such a leap of faith. You just go, right, have you moved yet? Oh, yeah, it's gone. It's moved. Which is why I guess they had the problem with the Beagle. Was it the Beagle that crashed? Because they just didn't get anything. And they were thinking, well, are we just waiting for the signal to get here? Quite amusing. Quite amusing. And of course, if you need to take evasive action at any particular time, you've got to do it before you even know it's going to happen. Space, eh? Can't handle it. And don't even get me started on the potential for crashing into stuff. Even leaving the Earth's atmosphere, because there's so much space junk around, floating around the Earth. Because you've got to reach such ridiculous speeds. I may have commented on this on an earlier audio boo, but because the International Space Station is whizzing around the planet at an immense rate, they've got to have these little thrusters to be able to knock it back and forth to make sure that it doesn't collide with even small pieces of space debris, because it's just like having a bullet being fired at it. I think they're trying to generate fields and stuff to repel things. And as things go on, it becomes that much more like Star Trek, doesn't it? Anyway, I shall close now, having reached 5 minutes. I wish you a very good night and apologise for the chaos which ensued after I was picked up. There was something else I was going to say, but that can save it for a later audio boo. Oh, I wanted to say thank you to Simon Toon for the advice and Acrobat as well about the information about promotion. I've got my letter through. I'm probably going to accept the job, not least because of the announcements made regarding the freezing of the licence fee for the next 6 years and the need to fund something or other. I don't know. What was it? Oh, that's right. The BBC is going to be bringing back in-house the World Service, which is an interesting because it used to, I mean, traditionally it was looked after by the Foreign Office. Obviously, it's going to still have a sort of Foreign Office-based remit, but it's no longer going to be funded by them. All this is going to be very interesting. But right now, I'm reaching the phase where I think to myself, I should be really grateful I've got a job. I've got friends on Facebook who are struggling to get jobs. And Twitter as well. And in this economy, I've just got to take it as it comes. What Simon was saying about the opportunities for management, yes, it appeals to me in a way. It does appeal. But it's that whole... I know I'm going to have to make a huge number of mistakes because I'm not somebody who just sits there and just lets it happen. I'm not particularly good at what I do. And the way I learn is by sort of having a go at it. When you've got a computer and you make a mistake, you can fairly easily build it back up again and sort of reinstall it, even reboot it sometimes helps. If you make a mistake with a person, that's a relationship, and it's a little bit more delicate and a little bit more difficult to deal with. And I think, although I've got to know the team I'm working with, who I'll soon be managing, most of the team very well over the last few years, the last thing I want to do is alienate myself with them. I'm not going to behave completely differently. In fact, quite a few of the roles would be not that much different to what I'm doing at the moment. But I also kind of want to get a bit creative. I want to make it a happy and interesting place to be within the remit of what I'm able to do as a member of the management team telling me what to do. I will enjoy it. I'm going to keep my hand in because I can't not be technical. But as Simon very clearly pointed out, there are two routes you can go. There's a technical route and there's a managerial route. And the further up the managerial route you go, the less you'll be involved in technology. And that's something, unfortunately, my boss is facing now. But this is all, whatever challenges, they always bring opportunities for experience. And that's kind of what I'm looking forward to now. But all that can wait for a little while. And... We'll see how things change. Anyway, better get to bed. Thank you very much for listening and good night.